Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today to hear a story of pediatric cancer. Jenny Olson is our presenter today, and Jenny has a unique story, to say the very least. She is married to her high school sweetheart, and she is mom to one child who beat the odds not once, but three times. Jenny's son, Will, is a pediatric cancer survivor. The road to pediatric cancer has led Jenny to become a public speaker and motivational speaker. Thankfully, she shares her story to the general audience on several podcasts, as well as with several businesses, organizations, and so much more. Jenny has taken to living a life that is nothing short of courage on purpose. You can find Jenny on LinkedIn and Facebook. Jenny, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your story about your son, Will, and his cancer journey. Thank you.
Thank you, Talia. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Okay, so let me give you, obviously, as Talia said, my name is Jenny, and I am the mom of Will, who is now 12 years old, almost 13. Let me start first with a little bit of Will's backstory. And as Talia said, he has beat the odds not once, but three times. Will's story started, he was due in March of 2008, and he decided to join us in January of that year. He was born at 2 pounds, 3 ounces, and was 14 inches long. So that bought him a stay at our local hospital, and he spent 61 days in the NICU. Will was early because, little did I know, I had a blood clotting disorder, or still have a blood clotting disorder that is genetic. And about 85% of those babies that don't have the mom on some sort of thinner, they're actually stillborn or are miscarried. So the fact that he started out in this world the way that he did was a miracle in itself. So as Will got older, and after we were done with the 2 months in the hospital, he needed to go through some physical and occupational therapy. He had to kind of adjust to, you know, because he was early, he had to adjust to a life that that would just kind of present him with some challenges. And so it assisted him with walking, as well as he had to learn how to swallow, how to really do the whole chew, swallow, you know, breathing while eating. And so we spent several months doing that. And then when Will was 2 years old, he had what we thought was just a summertime bug or some sort of virus going around. We went to the doctor. His pediatrician was on vacation, of course. We took him to our local urgent care, and they told us that he had strep throat, and to just give him the antibiotic that he needed. At that point, Will was still not getting any better. And so I took him back in, only to be told by that doctor that I was a first-time mom. I was just worried. I needed to suck it up and just deal with it and let him get better. The type of person that I am, I didn't let anything go. I just, inside, in my gut, just deep down, I just knew something was wrong with my child. I couldn't put my finger on it. Didn't think it was anything serious at that time, but just was very, very concerned as a mother. His pediatrician returned and asked to see him the next morning. And we went in and they sent us for an ultrasound. We waited probably 45 minutes to get those results, heard nothing, and we're told to go on our way, that the doctor would be calling us. So we assumed kind of a no news is good news, and it wasn't happening in person, so we weren't overly concerned. the doctor called and he told me while I was in the hospital lunchroom that they had found a very large mass on Will's liver and that we needed to get down to our local hospital, which happened to be the University of Iowa. And we needed to get down there immediately. He said if it were him, he would go that afternoon and not wait until the next day. As you can imagine, that was news that no parent expects to hear. In defense of his pediatrician, the reason that he spoke to me on the phone was because I had been the pediatrician's patient. And he had never had to give that type of news to someone he'd had as a patient that was the mother of his current patient. We ended up heading to the university that afternoon and went through tests and just a whole bunch of information, more information than you can even imagine as you're getting introduced into the pediatric cancer world. And it was then that we found that he had stage 3, what they call hepatoblastoma, or stage 3 liver cancer. Will ended up going through 4 rounds of chemo. During that chemo, second time, Will defied the odds again. We were waiting on the pharmacy in the hospital, and Will had had a hernia from where his biopsy surgery had been done. And while he was standing on the bed, he was trying to have a number 2. He was struggling and being 2 years old. And the unfortunate part about chemotherapy is that it does cause constipation. He was trying to have that. And in that time while we were waiting and he was standing there, his hernia ruptured and his intestines actually fell out of that hernia into his dad's hands. Yes, that is what I said. they did fall into his dad's hands. And we had a very short window of time for him to be taken to emergency surgery. And thankfully that was repaired and there were no long-term issues. After that, they decided to do 2 more rounds of an intense chemo for Will. And after 6 rounds of chemotherapy on his 3rd birthday, he had a liver resection and they removed 75% of his liver. They decided to do 2 more rounds of chemo after that. And that was what they call cleanup chemo to make sure that there was nothing that was missed at all throughout the whole process. During that time, one of the hardest parts about a kiddo with cancer, as you know, there are issues with adults too, but whenever there's a fever of a certain temperature, we would have to rush in immediately. They liked us there within an hour because one of the worst things that can happen to a child with pediatric cancer is they can go septic very, very quickly. So not only were we in the hospital for chemo and surgeries, there were many unexpected hospital visits as well as the rupturing of the hernia. So that just kind of takes you through a little bit of, you know, the diagnosis. Oh my gosh. And the most important part, I should say, is after 8 rounds of chemo in May of 2011, Will was declared in remission and has thankfully stayed in remission ever since. Not that he doesn't enjoy giving his parents a few scares, because he will. But he most definitely has done very well. And a little bit later, I'll kind of tell you a little more about his chances of survival, being that he was stage 3, and we'll kind of go over that. So now that you have Will's story, there's a couple of talking points that are really important. And, you know, while it's important for adults to have that going on, it's also just as important when you are the parent of a pediatric cancer survivor. And my number one thing that I would encourage, especially if you know anybody who's going through this journey, and something I've kind of touched on with someone who's part of this podcast is the importance of advocacy. And I cannot stress enough how important advocacy is as the parent or guardian of your child who is going through this. It is crucial, it is critical. And one of the things I've been told throughout our journey is that, you know, people are afraid to say anything to the doctors because they don't want to question them. And you know your child, you know when things don't seem right, you know when something just feels off. And really, you are the best advocate and the best answer to a lot of problems. It does not make you a difficult person. Don't let anyone ever tell you that. And it makes you proactive in your child's health and also appreciating that your doctors and nurses and the other healthcare providers are people too. Sadly, mistakes happen. Sadly, we have seen some of those mistakes, but you cannot, and I just cannot emphasize enough, just be a voice. And, you know, if your child, my child at the time was 2 years old, and they don't know, you know, owie or fever. I mean, they're starting to learn owie a little bit, but they don't really have a grasp of, I don't feel good, or this doesn't feel right. They just know that something's off. And a lot of times they spend a lot of time sleeping. A perfect example is Will went in, and it was actually New Year's Eve in 2010. And he ended up having what they call C. diff. And I won't get into a whole lot of details about that, but it is something that is quite common, especially when you've had, you know, so many antibiotics and everything clearing your system out. And he was completely asymptomatic. Trying to get him tested was near impossible. And that nurse, she just looked at me and she said, Jenny, what is it you need? What can I do? And I explained to her, I said, listen, he doesn't fit those symptoms. He doesn't, he doesn't have a lot of them, but he's usually asymptomatic and something seems off and he just fits his symptoms that he has had before. That's all it took. It was a matter of sending the test that needed to be sent and the results coming back and finding that he did in fact have C. diff. So it's not questioning of the doctors. It's not believing what they can do or just, you know, finding a way to challenge them. It's just being a wonderful voice, because they don't spend 24/7 with your child like you do. And so I cannot stress enough just how important it is to be an advocate when you're going through something like this. So if you know a family who has went through pediatric cancer, or if you, you know, sadly, the odds are you will probably end up knowing someone who's going through, and even if it isn't pediatric cancer, if it's a terminal illness or an ongoing health issue, one of the biggest things that we struggle with is PTSD. And the PTSD after something this emotional, something this trying, is very, very real. When I first was finished with this with my child, I thought, oh, I've got this. I've got it all figured out. You know, I'm good. And a nurse looked at me and she said, wait 6 to 8 weeks after the chemo has stopped, after everything has settled down, and then see how you're feeling and go from there. In 6 to 8 weeks, I completely broke down. I felt like I had a family that was no longer there because I was used to the doctors and the nurses. I had a medicine, which I felt like was a poison that was keeping away something else that was just as harmful to my child. And I was diagnosed with a type of PTSD. And I had told my doctor, I said, this isn't possible. How is this possible? I haven't been through a war. And she looked directly at me and she said, actually, you kind of have. So you have survived a war, or they have, and it is very real. It very much happens, and it's to be expected. You know, you've been had to be on your toes. You've had to be at your best. You've had to, that adrenaline just keeps going and going and going throughout the entire process. And I know for me, it was a full-time job. It was, you know, tracking temperatures and tracking medications. And we took a microwave cart that we had here, and the microwave came off of it. And of course, it was cleaned and sanitized and Clorox and everything. And there were about a dozen meds on it, and clean droppers and gloves and masks and anything you could imagine, and syringes. And it was like that for a very long time. So you have to be, you know, just like completely just with it and working that job. And, you know, your child is kind of like your boss, and you need to be able to be at your very best. So when that all stops and everything slows down, you know, then the reality sets in. The other part of the PTSD is the reality of what the outcome could have been. Sadly, you know, we did lose a few friends along the way. That is unfortunately a very sad part of pediatric cancer. And I guess, you know, I will kind of, you know, just be completely honest. We were incredibly blessed. We were very fortunate in our situation. And when you stop and realize how close it was to visiting, you know, death, not, you know, for Will, not once, but three times, that will do a number on a person's psyche. It really does. It leaves you just completely spent and just not sure kind of what to do with your emotions next. Another part of the PTSD that a lot of these parents will go through is you haven't had time for self-care. And I didn't take time for self-care. I didn't have time for that. You know, I had to be there for my child. I wasn't working. I was there for my husband. My husband would probably die if he knew I told this, but there was a point to when where Will had his liver resection, my husband's response to that stressor was passing out, and I caught him. And so, yeah, I love you, honey. Sorry about that. Just, you know, just kind of wondering, you know, who's there to take care of me. And so you haven't done any self-care. You haven't, naps were a thing that, didn't exist anymore. And, your life became about, you know, germs and treatments and what doctor was coming in next. And another thing about PTSD, I have a friend who has been in the military, and one of the things I realized, shortly after Will was done with treatment was there were triggers. And believe it or not, one of the worst triggers for me, and I just had to leave the store, was the kind of the dinging or the ringing of a cash register. And, you know, there's a big chain out there, and I won't say their name, but they have that big red bullet. I'm sure you know who I'm talking about. Or bullseye, not bullet, bullseye. And I was in there one day, and the panic just set in because I heard that ringing and the dinging. And what it was is it reminded me of his alarms going off on his pumps or on the, oh, he was on oxygen sometimes, or there was a couple times where after a surgery, you know, that would just go off. And that's what just kept going off in my head and going off. So those triggers are there, and they're constantly a reminder of, oh my goodness, this sounds just like what I went through. And it kind of catches your breath, and you kind of look around for the pump, like, wait a minute, you know, let's really grasp where we are at this moment. And not what that fear is. So PTSD for families is so real. And, you know, I'm just giving you kind of a small picture of it, but I tell you what, it took a very, very long time to feel, and I don't like this word, but to feel kind of normal again, and to not feel like I had so many triggers that were happening along the way. One of the things that I found that was really important too was how other people can help families who are going through this. You know, this is a topic we don't like to talk about. I didn't like to talk about it. I didn't like to hear radiothons. I didn't want to hear the sad stories, just because it was just that. It was incredibly, incredibly sad. And it broke my heart. And I couldn't imagine, you know, going through something like that. And when I became a parent, and then when I had a child who ended up having it, I just said, you know, there are so many things that happen behind the scenes. It's more than just the, here's the chemo, let's hope it works, and it's over. It's just, it's so much more than that. I mean, obviously that's a very important part. So the first thing I could tell you to do is that be patient. Be so patient with the families who are going through this. We don't always know what we need initially, or we're afraid to reach out, or some of us don't even like to ask for help. And so patience is huge. I know I had a lot of people who were there and had so many questions. And, you know, I've learned that when a friend tells me now that they have something wrong with their child, I find myself still, even after having went through this with my child, wanting to ask, you know, 5 or 6 questions to their every one answer. And I think that's just human nature. You know, we want to be there. We want to help. We want to fix it. And it's not possible. It's not an option. So just, I encourage you, if you know someone going through this, just, you know, please be patient with that. Also, one of the things that I got a lot, and some people are like, well, this, you know, this shouldn't be an issue, but sometimes it is sometimes it takes a long time to get back to people. And please don't take it personally. One of the things I found was that I had someone who I continued to upset, and they finally were able to come up and visit during my son's treatment. I had doctors that were coming in and out on a constant basis on that particular day. And it was a rapid changing situation. And they looked over at me and they're like, oh my gosh, I get it. Now I know why you can't get back to me, or it takes you 2 or 3 hours. It is just part of the process. You know, also know that exhaustion and trying just to keep up with life. One of the things I found, and I have you know, tried to keep lighthearted through it, is that it's hard to believe that life is still happening outside those hospital walls. You know, it just feels like your whole world has come to a screeching halt and a standstill. So you kind of expect that everybody else's has as well. And that's just not the case. You know, life still happens. You know, days still go by, but when you're going through this, sometimes those days just go on for what seems like years. And another thing I can say is planning when it comes to these families, planning is impossible. I gave up trying to plan. We made it home the very first time, and we only made it home for about 2 or 3 days before we were back in the hospital. And I finally gave up on planning. There's just no way you can plan anymore. It's just, you know, things change at a moment's notice. Fevers happen. Sometimes there's no explanation for the fevers. There's a whole stretch of reasons. So just know, planning is impossible. Another thing that I can't stress enough, and, you know, it's probably going to be a little bit on the sadder side, but know that these families, they will lose friends and family along the way that should be their support network. And that's the honest to goodness truth. It's already a major struggle to help your child navigate something life-changing, and this is an added stressor. And I'm not gonna, you know, go into a whole lot of detail on this, but, you know, no, we have some friends who have distanced themselves quite a bit. Some who the relationship just changed drastically. And this happened to us 10 years ago. And family that still won't speak, as if, you know, what we have is ongoing and contagious. And with pediatric cancer, you know, that certainly is not the case. But, you know, some of it is too that when you're going through this, you have to find your voice. You have to speak up. You have to say, you know, this is my child and I'm not going to do A, B, and C, or this isn't in my child's best interest. And sometimes people don't understand. And you know what? That's okay. But just know it does happen. And I have had talks with several cancer families and they have told me, oh my gosh, yes, this has happened to us, or so-and-so doesn't, you know, speak to us. And it is, it's very, very real. As you know, and we know this too, that we know that, you know, you can't ever understand, you know, until it's something that you've been through. And we know that sometimes we just need somebody there who is going to listen, who we can vent to. And if I can give one of the best pieces of advice, the best thing to try not to say is that it's going to be okay. and I chuckle because, you know, now that I've gotten so far out, I'm like, well, yeah, it is okay. And it was, but sometimes that's just not what you want to hear. You know, this is so, it's an unknown world and it's an unknown when adults go through it, but there just seems to be an unfairness when it's a child. And during treatment and the unknowns, there is absolutely no way to know that everything is going to be okay. And, you know, one of the things we relied on was our faith. You know, we knew that this was in God's hands, but we had no idea what his plan was for Will. And so, you know, I think as people, you know, okay doesn't always end up in the way that we think, but it doesn't feel okay. And it doesn't feel okay or normal when you're going through it. So sometimes you just want to, you know, talk to that person and just vent and say, you know what, this is just something that's happening to me and it is just really crappy. And I think sometimes just being able to get that out and know that you can do that with the right person is such a it's a release, and it's so much better than you can ever imagine. And one other thing is, and this is, happens for us too, you know, as time went by and as, you know, when Will hit the 5-year mark, things got a little easier. And I don't even know if easier is the right word, but we will always have a new normal. There'll always be that element of fear. Though with time that does kind of dissipate a little bit more. We always have to keep in mind that our Will is at a higher risk for, you know, the secondary cancers. And that even though, you know, he's better in a lot of ways, you know, a lot of families, the hard part is there's still a reminder. Sometimes it can be things like chemo brain is very real, or you know, struggling with motor skills. One of the things Will had to do is he had to learn to walk again. He had horrible neuropathy from one of the cancer drugs. And so it was just really important for us to realize that, you know, when we would go in for those checkups and just say, hey, you know, this is still going on or this is happening. And we would be told, you know what, this is your new normal. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be like everybody else's. It's going to look different, and that's okay. And you just kind of have to accept that and move forward. So I've done a lot of talking here, but I just, you know, I want to share a few more things with you. One of the things that I have learned throughout my son's pediatric cancer journey is that odds mean nothing. There are some things that happen that there are no medical explanations for. Don't get me wrong. I have a lot of friends in medicine and I firmly believe in it, but we found out once a whole lot of time had went by that Will's odds were a 5 to 10% chance of survival with how bad that it really was. So we know that there's not always an explanation and that odds, they're just that, you know, and he truly is a miracle and we are forever grateful. One other thought is to just love the people who are going through this. Be there for them, not just during this, but once the storm has settled. We need you. They need you. They need to know that you're there and they don't want expertise or answers. They just need a friend. And so that's the survivor that went behind me there. so just know that, you know, sometimes we just need to feel like we can vent and that somebody's going to be there. And we know that you may not understand it, but sometimes we just still have bad days or the realization of, you know, that storm that we went through. Another thing I want to just mention, I know it sometimes is overshadowed and all cancers are important. All cancers matter, of course, but it's so important to go gold, as we call it in the pediatric cancer world. And that September is Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. So if you didn't know that, there are a lot of people who do not know that. And I'm not so surprised by that at all, but it does get overlooked and we just can't emphasize enough just how important it is to go gold. And so, you know, let me just say, I am absolutely honored and grateful that Talia allowed me to speak to you guys. And I just want to kind of end what I have to say, or at least my big portion here, with a quote. And it means a lot to the medical providers. It means a lot to those who are part of the child's journey. But what the quote is 100 years from now, it will not matter what kind of car I drove, what kind of house I lived in, or how much money I had in my bank account, but the world may be better because I was important in the life of a child. So I will leave you with that. I thank you again. I thank you for listening to our story, and I thank you for just letting me be a part of it.
Thank you so much, Jenny, for sharing your amazing story, for being so vulnerable. I know that sometimes it can be tough to go back and revisit those things, but thank you for sharing Will's story, and your family's story. I believe it's stories like these that will help to bring more awareness to pediatric cancer, to foster more discussions that really need to happen. So thank you so much. I'm honored that you took some time out of your day to join us. And again, everyone, you can find Jenny Olson on LinkedIn and Facebook as well. So Jenny, thank you so much and blessings to you and to your family. And if anyone is watching this video and you have questions, I will provide links to Jenny's Facebook and LinkedIn accounts, so that if you want to follow up with her and get more information, you can do that. So you will find those attached to this video. Again, Jenny, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for educating us. And I know that whoever watches this video will walk away with more information and a different level of awareness about pediatric cancer. Thank you.
Thank you.